there. This is P.S. McKay, and I'm here with Elliot Gladstone for a very special episode of Entwined. Elliot, are you there?
Oh, yes. I think I messed up what we were supposed to be doing there. I'm sorry.
No, you didn't mess up anything. That's the glory of this experiment right here.
Yes.
So the whole point of this episode is we're doing an actually live recording to talk about the production of Entwined and the episodes that we've done so far. What do you think? Episodes 1 through 8 or 1 through 9, depending on the airing of this episode?
Yeah, so 1 through 8 are the ones that are currently available for the listeners to listen to, download, share with their friends and family. 9 will be happening relatively soon. This episode will probably come out after 9 is available.
Because you just want it out there.
Because I'm ridiculously excited to have it available to the world, yes.
It's a really good episode, I agree with that. But that's why we have the different order there. So, anyway. So, as I said, I'm P.S. McKay. I may sound a little different than I do in the recordings, and this is Elliot Gladstone here.
Elliot Gladstone, correct. And I sound a lot different than I do on the recordings.
Well, you still have the golden tone, so that's good.
Thank you.
All right. So, we're kind of doing this off the cuff. You know, this is very different from how we'd normally do it. We, you know, spend 15 hours each episode meticulously writing everything down. And this is a little uncomfortable for us right now, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, listeners and you guys get to hear the finished product. And that's really a labor of love for us, where we spend time on the internet researching something that interests us, you know, whether it be San Francisco or Stephen King or any of the topics that you've heard. And we really just dig into them to the point where we understand them probably better than we ever have before. And then we start writing, and we write and we write and we rewrite and we share with each other. And we work on it, trying to have it flow to the point where when we speak it, as you listen, it sounds natural. It sounds like something that, you know, that you guys will be able to digest easily and understand, and also kind of be excited about listening.
Exactly. So, again, this is very different from what we're doing. So the plan here is this is to be our first episode ever of the Fireside Chat, where we take, you know, the first 8 episodes, essentially, and go through them bit by bit, not necessarily pick them all apart completely, but use them as a stepping off point and discussing how we came about it and what our thoughts were behind the process and how we finally brought it to fruition. So I'm going to start here first. And Elliot, I'm going to put you on the spot because you were the one who first did this. Okay. You came to me one day back in February and you said, we need to do a podcast.
I did. That is exactly what I said.
So
I showed up. I pretty much walked directly up to you and I said, hey, this has to happen. I don't know what you're doing or what I'm doing, but this is absolutely the next thing that we're doing. And I was kind of just inspired. I mean, I spend, you know, you and I both have outside jobs other than writing and recording for Entwined. And spend a lot of time driving, and in kind of that, you know, that world, being in the car and alone with the road for so long, you got to have other stuff than music. You got to have other stuff than talk radio. You can't, you know, listen to sports talk all the time. And I slowly started to get into and fall in love with podcasts, and like immediately saw an opportunity for you and I, who we both love to write. We're both super creative, to where this is something that we absolutely can do together. And I was like, hey, this is happening. And you're like, okay, tell me more.
Well, yeah, exactly. I was kind of at a loss at the whole thing because I sat here and I listen to a lot of comedy podcasts and stuff. And I was like, well, a lot of the comedy podcasts that I listen to or the stories that I listen to, they have something to say, and or they have a very high production value. And my biggest concern was, what do we have to say? Because I don't consider myself a very particular, well, what's the other term? I don't consider myself an outspoken person. I consider myself someone who makes points, but I don't consider myself to be someone for the outspoken subject to guide people or things like that. Like the podcast needed a point.
Yeah,
I had no idea what that would be.
You have something to say, but you know, you're not necessarily somebody who's going to put yourself in front of a large group to say the thing that you have to say.
Right.
Right. And this podcast that we post on the internet every 2 weeks that focuses on our creativity and things that we find interesting is absolutely us standing in front of a crowd saying the thing that we want to say.
Yeah, and for some reason, that's simultaneously the most scary thing I could ever do and the most fun thing I could ever do. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because I feel exactly the same way. It's equal parts awesome and terrifying.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So do you remember? Okay, so I don't remember how we came about the first concept of Entwined. There were variations of it. Do you remember a little bit? I remember the first name that you threw out there. And I was like, oh, that could kind of work, but it's still lame.
Yeah. When we started talking about it, I was like, you know, you and I both write. We both, you know, whether it's just, you know, a short story or a long novel, we're both into that. And I was like, thinking about the podcast, and I'm like, we need to do something where we get to write, we get to tell a story, and it kind of goes together with something else. And I didn't have it at the moment, and I didn't, you know, it wasn't something that I was immediately like, oh, I know what that thing is. We're going to entwine stuff. You know what I mean? It was more like, I just don't want to write a story because that's not necessarily interesting to everybody, but I want to bring in things that are like common people that things that people are aware of or that they know about and tell them why they may not know about it exactly the same way they thought they have for their entire lives. And you're like, okay, I understand, I think.
I was on board with that. I was on board with that angle, but I felt like there needed to be more, right? Was I the one that said we need to like take other parallel stories and put it together?
Initially, I was like, oh, I have an idea. Let's talk about how some random fact is connected to some political theory. Or I remember I was like, Hobbes, let's talk about Hobbes and Locke and Rousseau and talk about how some random building in San Francisco could be related to, you know, some Hobbesian theory or something like that. And you're like,
God, you're so intellectual.
I pretend. And you're like, oh, yeah, that could be interesting. But then you're like, but what if there was other elements to it and not just like, you know, theoretical stuff, but there was like tangible things that you're like, hey, these two, three, four, five things are connected in a way that you might not have thought about before. And I was like, yeah, that's a good idea. And we just started talking about things and we made, do you remember we made homework assignments? I said, okay, so what are we going to do? And we set a date and we're like, okay, by this day, we have to have an idea.
March 15th, I think it was.
Yeah, or whatever. And then, and I'm like, we have to have an idea. But it was funny because like we both went home that night and had an idea the next day.
Right.
Right. And then we said, hey, you know what? Well, since we both have ideas, let's give each other 2 weeks or whatever it was to write something.
Right.
Put something down on paper. And I think I sent you something like that night.
You did.
And
that's how you work.
Yeah. and then
first, you, I fester. I have the red letter P on my chest here for procrastination / like I can't get this done right away.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, I'm going to think about it. And I'm like, yeah. I didn't think about it. There's just letters on paper. I don't know if they even go together, but I thought I'd, you know, turn it in for homework and see if you liked it.
Well, at first they didn't.
Yeah, they didn't.
As the first reading that I gave you, there were a lot of things that needed to be put in order, which is fine because that was just the first draft.
Yeah, that's right. That first draft was it was just a bunch of thoughts, right?
Yeah, it was just a stream of conscious, basically, which is great because that got your brain cells going and whatnot. And I'm glad that I was able to provide some assistance in doing that, which I never thought I could do, to be honest with you, which boggles my mind.
No, it was cool. And then I was like, hey, here's all this stuff. And you're like, okay, this is really good. I think this is exactly what we need to do. And then you told me what your idea for your show was. And then you pretty much had that put together relatively quick as well. Although I sent my document to you in Word format so that you could make changes, and you sent me yours in PDF so that I would never be able to copyright or plagiarize anything that was in that document.
Those were my thoughts, and I copyrighted those. Those belong strictly to me and cannot be reproduced without the express or written permission of the PS McKay clan.
Correct. So then we had that stuff together, and then, you know, I think we worked over those first two stories a lot, probably mine more than yours. You process a lot more before you end up on paper, whereas I end up on paper and then make a bunch of changes. And
which is a very interesting development difference between the two of us, I have to say.
Yeah, I can't. I don't know. I'm not. You know, you're.
Neither side is right. I mean, the better way.
My side's probably more right.
For you.
Yeah. Okay. Or for other people, different people.
All right. Some people have more episodes in the bank than I do. Okay. Right. Fine. And there's only two of us here. That's fine.
Yeah. I definitely end up. Yeah. But that was the learning about how your mind works and kind of how you can get your stories out. You work it over in your head and try to, I mean, when it's in my head, I have to get it out of my head or I can't do anything with it.
Right.
You, once you get it out of your head, it's like already born and ready to go. Like it's already walking.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So that was interesting. You're absolutely.
I'm like a mother giraffe.
Yes.
Like I give birth and they can walk right away after falling 6.5 feet.
Yes, a mother. Yes, I would say that's accurate. That's whereas right. Mine come out and they only have one leg.
You're a regular human.
Yes,
I'm a regular. They need another. They need another 2 years to bake and to be able to you know, walk. So that's fine.
Yeah. But from there, I mean, from there, we had two stories, two viable stories, episodes one and two. And we weren't sure at the time how that was going to work out, who was one and who was two. And I ended up recording as I've done everything first, because again, as we mentioned before, the big letter P. And as I recorded first and got a lot of stuff edited first, you know, mine ended up being episode one. Did not have the benefit of music throughout, although it did have the initial theme.
Okay, so before we go to that part, where'd you come up with the subject of Ralston? How did that nip you and guide your interest?
So good, excellent question. And I don't think I've told you this before, so you might be interested to hear it. So you and I have
not. This is strictly for the recording,
right? For the other people. You and I have a mutual friend that we both used to work with, and he owes me
$20, by the way.
I think he owes me $20 too. he was kicking around the idea of opening a pub in the area. So he was interested in opening a pub, and he came to me and he asked if I was interested in being a part of that. And I said, absolutely. But the one thing you have to do to be a part of something like that is have money,
right.
Which I wasn't prepared to have, because anybody who's checked out our website knows about that. I have four kids and they have a grocery bill associated with them. That's
what?
Like, I think it's like six digits grocery bill. And we buy Ritz crackers by the like five pounds. So anyway, he was interested in starting a pub, and he was asking myself and another one of our friends who, like, you know, like, hey, what's a good name for it? And I was, you know, did some kind of thinking around the idea. And, you know, I was like, hey, you know, it'd be great if you called it Ralston Taps. And here's why. And I, you know, presented to him the idea of why it would be a great idea to call it Ralston Taps, because the area it was in and the connection to you know, Ralston and everything like that. And it wasn't super well received, and the pub never ended up being open. So it was kind of a non-idea. But in helping him try to think of a name for that place, I learned a lot about this Ralston character, and he became interesting to me. I was like, I've been in California. I've been to San Francisco. I felt like I knew a lot about the area, and I never heard of this guy. And so I was, you know, just kind of enamored with it. And I was like, we're thinking about ideas. And I'm like, this is an idea. This is something that can be something. And from there, just kind of worked at it until it became the story that it ended up being, which I mean, honestly, I think it's probably the most well-written story I have to date. It doesn't necessarily entwine as many things as some of the other stuff we've done, but it's definitely was my favorite one so far to do.
I think it's the most California-centric of the ones you did that I found most interesting locally. And that was what kind of set me off to the idea of whether this podcast we were going to do was going to be more California local based, or if we were going to take this to a more universal level, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
Because mine was also California based, and actually what you did with Ralston, which was local to you, right?
Yeah.
Not to give anything away, but you're not too far away from Modesto, which was named after Ralston, indirectly.
Right.
The story of Joe Burris happened in my hometown, currently, in Fresno.
Correct.
So don't stalk me, everyone. But yes, I live in Fresno. And that kind of triggered this story I came across. It was originally a crack.com story. Great website, by the way. You should take a look at it if you have never been. but what piqued me about this is this wasn't even mentioned that this story happened of Joe Burris in Fresno. It was just about Joe Burris in this Cracked article. And it was a quick mention that it happened at this amusement park, right? And I'm like, wow, Blackbeard, is that just that we were just there? And that festered in my mind for about a year and a half or so. And then when we came up with the idea for this podcast, I'm thinking, okay, so this has to entwine with something, right?
Correct.
So.
Well, the Joe Burris story, I mean, super, I you know, I'm from, again, never heard of it before. And listening to it, I was very, actually reading it first, right? Because that's how this started. I was very intrigued in kind of the connections and magicians and just honestly, I mean, why some of the things happened the way they happened. And I know you can't answer those things, but I can only imagine that being from the area and knowing of the story, you know, the draw that that was to you. What did you find? As you wrote this thing, what was the most interesting piece to you about the Joe Burris story?
Well, it had almost never happened. What was interesting in researching it, it was almost a legend because I couldn't find anything in the local paper, the Fresno Bee. I couldn't find anything in any real hardcore or traditional news source about this. So it felt like almost legendary. And I mean, the most legitimate news source I could find was a hard copy episode on YouTube.
Yeah, I saw that. You emailed that to me and I opened it up and I'm like, oh, we're watching things from the 1950s for our show. That makes a lot of sense.
So with the worst sound quality ever. And I mean, so with that video, I'm like, okay, so this really did happen. And I'm sitting here going, okay, so this has to, you know, be related in somehow, in some way. And I don't remember how I entwined it with Houdini. I knew that Houdini died on Halloween, and I knew from that video and that article that Burris died on Halloween.
But do you remember when you initially brought it to me, the facts that you presented about Houdini were wrong?
That's right.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. I originally thought, and that was in the story that I wrote, how I originally thought Houdini died in an escape act. I grew up thinking that. I thought that was just what happened, and it wasn't until I actually did the research on Houdini, and I'm pretty sure I came across it a few years ago too, and then just went out of my mind, because you and I both share the common problem of we have a whole bunch of useless information with nothing to do with it, which is kind of why we started this podcast in the first place, to do something with that information.
Yes.
And
yes. I have no math information though.
No, so no math, no math. Senseless facts that we can't put to common use other than this, which is fine. You know, we have a creative outlet, but
correct. And not math facts, different facts.
Yeah.
Yes.
So no, serious lack of math facts. And I realized, oh, he died on Halloween, and it was the weirdest way, a random assault case, a random beating. And I was hoping to entwine it that it was both an escape act, and I kind of thought that it might have diminished the idea that they died. But the thing was, Houdini was assaulted days before Halloween, and he succumbed to his injuries on the night of Halloween.
Correct. And that, I remember initially, I felt like, because you told me the original what you thought. You're like, hey, it was, you know, Houdini and Joe Burris died the same way, et cetera, so on and so forth. And then you had told me actually it was different. And I remember being disappointed because I thought when I read or listened to this, I was going to be like, well, that's just not what we're going for. but then when I heard it for the first time.
Oh wait, so you read it, you were disappointed.
Well, the first version that you wrote was different, right? And then, or the, when we talked about it, it was different. And then when I read it,
about it was different.
When I read it, I didn't catch it. And then when I listened to it the first time, and then I was like, okay, well, that's not. But then when you finished the episode, I was like, no, I think it's actually better. It's actually better that they didn't die in the same way. And it kind of it put a different bow on the story, because the stories weren't like, hey, these are just two of the same things.
Right.
It's like, hey, these are two different things, but they're connected in this way, which is a little bit more unique and different. And I like that very much.
Right. And there's almost a supernatural element to it, which, you know, our goal here wasn't to have a supernatural element to it, you know, to ground things in facts, which is why I just disparaged the idea of magic, and it was all just tricks and everything and coincidence. But, you know, sometimes there's so many coincidences out there, it just gives you pause, you know?
Yeah.
So that was kind of the mystical element I was going for, not intending to create a mystical element.
Yeah, no, I think that worked. I think that you did a good job with that. I mean, my main question was, why the heck did he not reinforce the plexiglass? Like, come on. Like, I know, and like I mentioned before, you can't answer it, but still, I re-listened to your episode today before we're doing this, and I was like listening to it again. I'm like, why? And you're like, and I don't know why. And I'm like, I want you to know why so you can tell me, because it doesn't make sense.
Well, that's the style of writing. I write it in a conversational way.
No, I know.
But yeah. So, well, I appreciate that. I'm glad that you interact with my recorded voice in a very weird way.
Yeah, I mean, it was super weird when I was actually in the car driving from work actually to the house, and it got to that point, and I was actually vocal talking to the vehicle and asking why, because it seemed like a natural thing to ask. It's actually funny. One of the people that reads our website articles mentioned that they did the same thing when they were
Give the website article a plug, by the way.
Oh, yeah. At entwinedpodcast.com. On alternate weeks from when our episodes are released, we do something called Finger Food, which are just, you know, quick little shorts, like extremely short stories, maybe not even a half a page, less than that, about a topic that we find interesting that sometimes is connected to something else, sometimes isn't, just maybe information that you don't know. And you did one on the Fermi paradox. And
yes.
somebody that listens and reads the Finger Food articles had commented to me that after they read that, they looked up at the person that was sitting next to him and said, where are all the aliens? And so I think it's definitely clear that your writing style, you know, you definitely translates to the person who's listening or reading or whatever, probably what you're trying to get them to feel or react to, because I've done that, and I know other people have done that. Where are all the aliens?
Well, they're not here.
No.
So that we know.
And we probably won't see them.
No, right. No. But I do know the president did confess to black helicopters, just not against American people.
Correct.
That's documented. That's clear.
Correct.
So moving on from aliens, let's go on to what I think is probably your best entwined that you've ever done.
Three?
No. Okay. Your second best entwined you've ever done.
Okay.
Which is three, Quicksilver.
Quicksilver, so, yes.
You used Mercury, and I was not surprised with the tie-in to the Mad Hatter, because I always knew about the history of the Mad Hatter and everything. What blew me away, continue with that entwine.
Yes, so what blew you away? Well, it's funny because I wrote this probably 72 hours after I was sitting by a pool with my stepfather and my kids, and my stepfather was going into just kind of some informational stuff about the Mad Hatter and why he's called the Mad Hatter and the element of mercury and things of that nature. And at the moment, which apparently you and maybe the rest of the world were already aware of, I was like, what? That's not true. What you're saying isn't true. That can't be true. That's not a thing. That is not a thing. And
this was news to you?
It was news to me. And so I popped onto the internet. I did the Google thing from my phone, and I found immediately article after article after article that was kind of talking about the role of hat makers and mercury and felt and, you know, Lewis Carroll's Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, so on and so forth. And I was shocked. And so, you know, the drive home from where I was a lot of hours, and my family slept, which was always, which, you know, gives me, you know, 6 hours of alone time. And I kind of worked this episode out of my head, about 90% of the episode out of my head. And got to the point.
You pulled what I do.
Huh?
You pulled off what I do.
I did. I did. I can't. Well, because it wasn't anything that I necessarily needed to research. Because after I got the felt thing with the mercury, you know, it was just a basic outline. So I was like, oh, I wonder how that would work. And so I put it together and got to the, you know, I got from the Mad Hatter, or I got from mercury to the hat makers to the Mad Hatter, Lewis Carroll to the Mad Hatter. And then from there, I got to, I'm like, you know what, I want to take it a little further. And so I thought, you know, let's talk about top hats in general, hat makers, or what kind of hats they made, right? And took it to Lincoln. And then I was like, and Lincoln was shot. And I always remember as a kid, I don't know if it was third grade or
was
seventh
Lewis
grade.
Was Lewis Carroll a contemporary? He was a contemporary of Lincoln, right?
How do you mean?
Like they were around the same era.
Oh, correct. Yes.
Yeah, that's right. And that's where the entwine comes in.
Correct. And around the same time, and
spoiler alert, everyone.
Right.
If you haven't listened to it.
Spoilers. Don't, if you haven't, if you're one of the people that listens to the show and you haven't already listened to the show, go
this
back.
This is a post-mortem spoiler.
You're a half hour into this already and you need to stop. Turn around, head home. And come back later. We'll be
the worst kind of spoiler alert that could ever be.
Yeah, we'll get better in the future. So I was like, hat makers, you know, Lincoln was famous for wearing a top hat around the same time. And then I always had that memory of him being assassinated. And that was like the first assassination that I'd ever heard of, because you learn about President Lincoln relatively early in your academic life. And, I was shocked that people could be killed, and that always, it was always something for me, even though my mom will continue to remind me that I did not do the Abraham Lincoln report in second grade or whatever grade it was, which I probably should have done. So then I'm like, hey, he was assassinated, and John Wilkes Booth, so on and so forth. And so I had my story wrapped, and I think I even sent you a message, and I'm like, hey, this is it. I texted you and I said, this is, and you're like, that's great. Go with it.
No, but my reaction was, holy cow.
Yeah. Holy cow. Correct. That's right. Holy cow. And, so I said, I'm going to write it. I need to get it out of my head. So I did. And, but then I think I texted you and said, hey, there's a little something special for you at the end.
Yes. Which,
and I did one Google search further and found that the person who had shot John Wilkes Booth was also a hatter and also mad. And it was like, you know, somebody else I know does this gesture with their hands kind of going together in the air, and they say like entwined. It was like that perfect moment. It was like that perfect moment where it's like, hey, all this stuff absolutely connects together, and it felt really good.
Yeah. That was a mic drop moment, in my opinion.
Yeah. I think I actually tweeted something like that.
You did. With Adam McKay, I believe it was, just drop entwined.
Entwined. Yeah, that's right. And that, for those of you who don't follow us on Twitter, that's at Entwined Podcast. So, but from there, from episode 3, we jumped into episode 4, which for you was the Roddenberry story, correct?
Yes.
Correct.
And the John Denver story.
And the John Denver, well, the John Denver story was something I had known about. So it wasn't like when you had told me, I'm like, oh yeah, I know that story. But I was absolutely no idea around any of the other stuff that had happened or transpired that what you talked about towards the end of the podcast. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was really well done. I thought it was so different from your first episode. And by now, what was this episode 4? You and I were both using music in our podcasts.
Right.
And you used in, you know, you sampled briefly a song that was important to kind of all of the main characters from the story.
Right.
So, you know, kind of what to talk to us a little bit about that, because I thought that one was really well done.
Personally, I feel it was probably one of the weaker entwines, but it's more an ethereal entwined in the sense that they were still affecting each other in certain circumstances, you know, and that just brings back to the idea of how experimental this podcast really is. Like what are our limits when it comes to what makes a subject entwined, right?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. No, because I think actually one of us said to the other one, or it was probably you, that we're kind of like, when you think about the show and the episodes, you're struggling with like direct connections and indirect mm-hmm. connections and which ones are better and if that's even a thing. And I think kind of what we've learned from doing these shows and getting the feedback from the listeners is that neither one is better, that it depends on kind of the material, right. but really how we put it together. So right. indirect or direct, if we put it together right, you guys like it. If right. we don't put it together right, it's kind of not so much, right?
It's a dry history lesson.
Correct. And this one, I don't think was a dry history lesson. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed hearing yeah. about it. And, you know, yours always have, and this is something that I think we see throughout all of your episodes, and you mentioned it to me before we started recording, is you always have like a different take, an angle on the human aspect of it. Like people died, yeah. people lived, people, you know, they grew personally or professionally, or, you know, it's not just, hey, all these things happened and they're connected. It's right. always a little bit more than that. So
these are real people that yes. this happened to, you know, and, you know, there's a human aspect, and there are different kinds of, I don't want to say angles. I can't think of a better term than that, though.
No, it's like a writer, you know, if you're writing for, I don't know if you were in newspaper in high school or college or anything like that, but you have a slant, right?
Right.
You have an angle, yeah. you have a bias, you have a perspective, and you
don't tell me I have a bias. That's a dirty word.
No, it's a thing. It's in the dictionary.
Not a hypothesis. It's a thesis.
Yeah. Hypotenuse.
Hypotenuse.
Is that what you meant?
No,
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 but no,
you know where you can find the hypotenuse.
It's at the zoo.
No.
Ugh.
No. I don't know how risque we want to get on this, but there are legs on either side of a triangle and then you'll find the hypotenuse there.
Ah, so. Creepy. Thank you for that.
So anyway, my eighth grade teacher, everybody, she taught yes. me that. So where were we?
So that was 4.
Four. Yeah. You know, basically it was one of those things where I literally had to Google Gene Roddenberry and John Denver together to find the magical algorithm that linked them together. And what was interesting is that they had this shared experience of these plane crashes, and one was exceedingly tragic in that we lost a national treasure, and the other plane crash was essentially what created a cultural pivot point in Star Trek, you know, that is right now. I mean, I don't know if you've been following everything, and maybe it's just who I follow on Twitter or whatnot, but I mean, Star Trek is like a huge thing nowadays. Like, you don't have to be ashamed to like Star Trek anymore.
No.
Which is insane to me. But, you know, and it all started from a plane crash back in 1947, I think, in the Syrian desert. You know, everything was going to be okay. And, you know, that's a wonderful lesson to learn and to, you know, a life lesson to live by. And the idea that everything was going to be okay in conjunction or contrast to this tragic episode of losing this cultural icon who had such a good, you know, exploration outlook or a song, like in Callisto, you know, it wasn't the stars, but it was the spirit of exploration.
Right.
I thought that was a pretty neat juxtaposition, if anything.
Yeah, no, I did too. And you leave the listener with something more than, hey, this guy, he was crazy and he was also a hatter. So like they walk away with something other than, oh, that was neat. They also there's some food for thought along with, oh, that's neat.
Well, I mean, what was it I always said? Like the goal of our podcast was we want people at the very end to say, huh, like that changed people. Like that's like a story for a cocktail party or something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
You know, it adds interest and intrigue to everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
I lost you.
No, I'm here. I'm here.
No, I lost your interest is what I'm saying.
No, you lost my intrigue. It's different. It's a different thing. It's on the left side of my brain, whereas the interest is on the right.
So, which brings us to episode 5, which is Message Received. So you started this one out very differently than your others, which is a much more creative tone. And I would say like a little bit similar to how I start a lot of mine, but on a much more narrative scale. And where were you inspired by that?
Well, I mean, as I mentioned before, you and I both like to write. Otherwise, right, we wouldn't be doing this. I mean, the writing part for us, as simple or as complex as it is the easier of the parts, right? Mm-hmm. The researching and the speaking and the digitizing and the interwebsing and all that other stuff is more complicated. And so we both like to write, and I was feeling, I actually had written a chapter in a book that I'm working on and decided that, hey, you know what? I want to start off the next episode with like the beginning of a chapter. I want people to, you know, I want to have it be a story. I want to have it be a story that is going to connect everything and is going to be kind of setting the ground for where the entwined is going to go.
I think this is the strongest entwined, by the way, out of all of them.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I like this one. I remember bringing this one to you, and I started with, hey, there's these climbers. They're in Yosemite. I've never climbed before, so I did research to figure out what that's all about. Kind of was trying to connect communication, Morse code, unwritten communication to what the topic was going to end up being, which had this Morse code slash transfer of information thread throughout it. And I wanted to set the stage with that story, which I think I did relatively well. And then, you know, jumped right into Wrigley, who, you know, started direct communication and was a great communicator, and twisted in some other interesting stuff from Morse code to the great communicator himself, Ronald Reagan, and calling baseball games from a Morse code ticker tape.
Right.
You know, all the way back to the creation of the barcode, which not only is part of it through the Morse code aspect, which was inspiration for its creation, mm-hmm. But also in the fact that it transfers information. And
yeah,
and
that rope was the common thread,
right? And then it absolutely, figuratively, literally, maybe also both of those things. And then kind of at the end, just pulling it back and bringing it home back to Wrigley. You know, I, as I was kind of researching it and kind of doing the outline, I was like, oh, this could work. And I feel like it did. And I got some feedback from the listeners, from you guys, that it was good. And, you know, obviously McKay liked it. My mom liked it.
I liked it. Your aunt liked it.
My aunt liked it.
Loved it.
Absolutely. And, and so we had all that in there. And, the one piece of it that I didn't feel like I kind of manicured, I don't know if that's the right word, properly, was I struggle getting the music right. And I know 5 for me, and I think 6 for you, was like our first, hey, we're starting to get this music happening the way it's supposed to be. We're starting to get our recordings the way that they're supposed to be. Our voices don't sound terrible. And so this was kind of the first one, and it was most of the way towards where I wanted to get to, but not all of the way. So I still felt like it was lacking. But yeah, no, that was 5. which was a completely different process, topic, flow, and everything from six, because you went from four to six with my five in between, and your six was the Stephen King one, correct?
Yeah.
And that one was completely different because for you,
yeah, that would cause people whiplash.
Yeah.
Literally.
Absolutely. But for you also, you had the human element, which you always do, and kind of that, the person that's behind the story and how people feel. And, you know, you're very good at describing those things. So that was still there. That's still true. But you added extra stuff that you didn't have from the first two stories. So it was a more complex entwined for you than the other ones. So kind of walk us through that.
Well, I mean, the thing about his name was Brian Smith, right? I don't have my transcript in front. It was correct. Brian Smith and Stephen King. I mean, it was a very self-encased entwined. I mean,
but like, it wasn't because you had the... You had the whole concept of the opioid addiction.
Well, that was what I was going to bring up. I mean, I sat here. Thanks for going ahead of me.
Yeah, I have a. Do you want to talk about eight also while we're doing this? We can skip ahead.
Yeah, right. So there were a whole bunch of incidents that happened between these two people, and I said, well, that is probably one of the most entwined stories ever. But the idea is we want an outer element in there to show how that entwining can really be affected by the outside world too. And, you know, it was when I figured out that Stephen King was on the same medication that Brian Smith was on when he killed himself inadvertently, by the way. This was not a suicide. This was an accident. It was an accidental overdose. And, you know, Stephen King was an addict, and I sat there and I go and CBS News was doing this whole big opioid cover story for 2 weeks, like on the evening news, and so it was top of mind. And I sat there, I go, well, there you are. That's it. I mean, this whole medical industry is just now learning how potent these medications are, how dangerous these opioid medications are, and how addictive they are. And they've been prescribed, you know, just, you know, at will.
Like anybody.
Anybody, to anyone. And, you know, I was just watching another episode. I was watching an episode of Legit last night. I had trouble getting to sleep.
Is that Cartoon Network?
Legit Jeffries. And I think he's an addict too.
Is it on Cartoon Network or Disney Channel?
Jim Jefferies on Cartoon Network.
Well, I don't know. Those are the channels. In fact, as we're talking, Nick at Night is playing in the background in this room.
Oh, no. It's a canceled show. It's on Netflix right now. Okay. It was on FX, but the Australian comedian Jim Jefferies, there's an episode where he gets shot, and I'm sitting there, I'm watching this, and the doctor just goes, all right, so we're going to give you some, you know, painkillers, some Oxycontin, some fentanyl, and then we'll also give you some Ambien so you can sleep, and also some other medications so that you can digest your food properly. And I sat there, and this is a common thing that happens. Doctors do this. I mean, they give you medication for your medication. And it just blew my mind. Like, this was happening. And up till just recently, this is status quo. This episode that originally aired was 2 years ago? Yeah, it was 2 years ago. And it was only at the beginning of the point where we realized, wow, opioid medication is a lot more potent and dangerous than we really realized. But the effects were being felt for decades beforehand. And that was my angle. That was my thought. And so really, the boogeyman, so to speak, not to jump ahead or anything, was this opioid medication. That was the link right there. And it was an inadvertent link that caused these two incidents to truly happen, because he was on this medication, Brian Smith was, before he hit Stephen King.
Yes.
You know? And then, Stephen King then needed that medication.
Yeah, and then the whole thing with the minivan and the dates and all of that matching up. I mean, it all came together pretty nicely.
Yeah, it was probably the most entwined of entwines that I could come up with, and on more mystical level, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like,
but not
coincidental.
Yeah, but... Yeah, no, absolutely. I know what you mean. I thought it was good. I remember listening to it, and I know I sent you a message relatively I maybe even while I was still listening to it, and I said I like this one. I liked it.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So that's what number are we on now?
Seven. Which is perspective. Which right. You brought a much more personal element to this. This was the one that I wrote to you. I read this, right?
And you said boom. Nobel Prize or something for me.
No.
Right? Did I misunderstand that?
You did misunderstand.
I did.
I said, boom, you, sir, found your voice.
I did.
Like, this was your, not coming out necessarily, but this was you being able to speak on a very personal level. Not to say that you were giving personal items away.
Correct.
This is a vulnerable episode for you.
Yeah, I think, absolutely. I think that that's a fair assessment. This one, I mentioned that I like the first episode, the story I wrote for that. I think I spent the most time with that one. I worked it over the most. So that one I think is probably my favorite. But this one, I really, really enjoyed writing this one. Mm-hmm. I felt like it allowed me to be super creative. I felt like it allowed me to bring in some of myself to the story, put myself in the entwine, which is something that I was curious if I'd be able to do. Because I know you had mentioned, you know, in the John Denver story as a kid, you talk about travel and in the Stephen King one, you don't specifically talk about yourself in the same way you did in 4, but you mentioned stuff that's important to you. And even in the Joe Burris story, because it's, you know, in the area where you are, you do that. And I hadn't done that really yet. And I was relaying facts. And so I wanted to try. And I used The Old Man and the Sea, which I did read before I wrote this. And came up with the idea for, and then as soon as I was as I was reading it, I'm like, this is a completely different thing from when I had to read this in high school. Absolutely different thing. Mm-hmm. It's not even close to the same thing. In high school, it was like annoying and frustrating. And there's the, you know, okay, just, I don't understand why you don't just let the fish go and go home. Like just literally just let, you could just let go. If you just let go, this book is over. I don't have to read it anymore. You can go back to your house and do whatever it is you're going to do. And we move on. Everybody moves on. And reading it as an adult, I was like, no, don't let go. You can't let go. You know what I mean? And I felt connected to him as he was talking about the fish. And like at one point was talking about, I mean, he references the fish as, you know, he talks about loving it and it being his friend, and he's got it hooked and he's trying to get it back to shore as he's beating off sharks from eating it. And it's like, I don't know, it just hit me. And I started writing, and it was probably the easiest entwine for me to write. Stream of consciousness, but a stream of consciousness that actually translated into something other than drivel.
Yes. Yeah, it was the first one I read. There was no drivel.
Yes. No drivel.
I almost wish I wrote, thanks for no drivel.
Hey, if you in the future, if you could do it this way, that'd be great.
Yeah.
I didn't do much to it after that first version. I really didn't. You know, I think actually, I believe after you read it, you're like, this is, like, you didn't have anything to say other than this is great.
Yeah.
And you're not my English professor or, you know, the managing editor of Entwined or anything. But, you know, we both bounce ideas off each other and we always have feedback, and you hadn't had any yet. And so I was like, yeah, I felt like that was a good one. And I know from some of our fans, some of the people that listen to the show, that we've received some feedback that it hit them, the story hit them in a similar way. My story, the story I told, that about how this story had or hadn't impacted me. And then, you know, obviously there's the Napoleon element and the Grant element and some of the other stuff that's kind of mixed in. But ultimately,
this
the story
is one of those more indirect entwines too, very similar to my episode 4.
Correct.
With John Denver. And, you know, what's his face? The Great Bird of the Galaxy.
Correct. And it was super fun to write. So,
right.
Yeah, that one I really enjoyed. So I was happy to do that one, which again was in stark contrast to what came next, which was number 8, And the one that's available out now, that's our most recent show, one you wrote, which was
The Boogeyman.
The Boogeyman is the title. The Boogeyman, which is, I think, probably a good eye grabber for anybody who's out there trying to kind of scroll through our feed. I bet that
well, you chose that picture. That's all you, man.
I know. I bet the title and the picture
are... So pat yourself on the back like you wanted to.
Absolutely. But no, I mean, I think that people are going to be drawn to it by the title, but I don't think they'll be disappointed by the content. So talk to us a little bit about how the Boogeyman worked out for episode 8.
Sorry about that. You know, it's one of those things. Again, you know, we're only 8 episodes in, right? And we've already talked about the different levels of entwined that, you know, we're experimenting with, and how your last one, Perspective, was probably the least direct entwined, but I felt that it was the most human connection that I ever felt in out of your work, right?
Right.
Which is interesting. Because you don't have a direct connection necessarily. You have incidental connections. But absolutely. I found that very powerful, as opposed to it blowing my mind with Wrigley Gum being the central line through that whole thing, which is just an amazing entwined. But, you know, so I sat there and, you know, I wanted to do Bhopal. I knew there was something about Bhopal that was different, the Bhopal tragedy in India. And, you know, looking back on it, I don't think I may have done the tragedy as much justice. There were a lot of people that died. And, you know, it wasn't my place necessarily to just use that as a point maker. And
well, I didn't realize how, I mean, I heard your entwine and I heard you talk about it, but until I put together the PDF color transcript for the episode, I really didn't realize, like, the visual that goes along with the story.
Yes.
Was it made your story better? Me putting together that PDF, putting in some of those images and kind of, you know, knowing more about it at that point. Right. And I didn't realize, I mean, I knew that there was a lot. From you said it, like,
right,
and you just said it again, but it didn't hit me really until I saw the picture.
Right. And, you know, I was trying, I wanted to bring justice to the idea that these innocent people died for an industrial reason, but it wasn't because of an evil traditional industrialist. You know what I mean? This chemical plant was there for a reason. It was there for good reasons. You know, it was there to bring economic prosperity to the region, which was otherwise exceedingly poor. And you'll have, you know, the outside influences of, you know, poor inspections and different things like that. But the overall good part was there were good aspects of having this factory there. And I wanted to connect that somehow into the human development. How does this juxtaposition of this uber poor part of the Indian nation, you know, how does that reflect to the overall human condition? And I wanted to connect it to Agent Orange. You know, you remember that conversation, right?
Absolutely.
And I just completely dropped it in the end. I mean, I couldn't figure it out. But I wanted to connect vitamin C to Agent Orange, to Dow Chemical, to Union Carbide, with Union Carbide at the time was the owner of the factory that in Bhopal. And it just wasn't coming together because there are so many different companies that make vitamin C, and Agent Orange was an herbicide. So I just thought, okay, so I got to step back, and I wanted to make a more literal connection in essence, but I couldn't make the direct literal connection like Wrigley, because Wrigley stands out in my mind as the most literal physical connection. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that that's fair. And I think that we have some other stuff planned for the future that I think will do that as well. But I absolutely see what you mean on that point.
Right. And so I went back to the roots of episode 2, where you know, the entire idea of the paranormal or the ethereal is always present in my mind. You know, I mean, I may not necessarily, I don't believe in ghosts. I don't believe in, you know, that thing necessarily, you know, that there's these uber spirits out there that are necessarily affecting everything. But there's nature out there that creates these weird coincidences. And, you know, there was this idea of the boogeyman for some reason. You know, I think it was because in Bhopal, the people were attacked at night.
Yeah.
Right?
That's what
and
I
that's
got.
That's a scary... That's when you're most vulnerable. You're at night, you're sleeping, and...
Writing podcast episodes.
Oh, God, until like 3 a.m. I remember I sent you that email and you go, it's 2 a.m. I'm like, yes, and you're up still.
Yes.
So, but, you know, I remember thinking the darkness is so scary. And I realized I remember running up those stairs. And that's a very personal story, running up those stairs from the basement back in New England, you know, where it's a dark basement. And you have to run a little bit faster because you feel like something's behind you about to grab you. And then I realized, well, that's it right there. You know, why do we make things? Well, it's to make our lives better, right?
Right.
And, you know, I knew the Uria thing was an anecdotal thing that I was able to tie in because that was the first incident in science where we were able to make an organic compound out of non-organic things. That was revolutionary.
Yeah.
Crazy, you know? And we're still doing revolutionary things, making organic things out of non-organic materials. And it's blowing our minds every year. So, you know, and it all started back then in the 1800s, you know? So, you know, it was this ethereal boogeyman. It wasn't the boogeyman. It, you know, there is no real boogeyman that actually exists, but it's the nature of the boogeyman.
Right.
That was the cause for us to make ourselves better. And sometimes when we make ourselves better, we create that same boogeyman that we were running from.
Oh, absolutely. No, I mean, I absolutely got that from it. And I think the boogeyman, the nighttime thing, I mean, that for me, that was huge because it did set the stage for, you know, this is the thing. That was the thing hiding under their beds.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Literally crawling under their windows.
Right.
And up from under their beds. I mean, yep. That's it. So. Right. You know, I didn't want to be exploitive of such a tragic event, but I wanted it to also be a point of learning in the sense that, you know, we manufacture these things for a reason. And it's no excuse that this happened, but we also have to learn from it too, you know?
Absolutely.
So that's the ultimate thing I want people to take away, which I think this is a nice button point is... When we write these things and we produce and we publish these episodes, we want people to learn from them. Like, you know, add a little perspective, a different twist on history, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We want people to walk away, like you mentioned before, that, oh, yeah, that's neat, or the aha kind of, or moment. But we also want them to kind of look at their history, not in a revisionist way, because that's not what we're trying to do here at all.
No, not at all.
But in kind of a way that it's like, oh, that was, you know, I didn't know those two things could go together, or hearing about things that I already knew or partially knew in the way that you told them to us was right. Interesting to me, to the point where I feel like I learned more about each subject and also was entertained kind of at the end because of how everything is delivered.
Exactly.
Yeah.
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 So.
So yeah, so that's episode 8. So we have episode 9 ready to release, as yep. We mentioned before, that I want that to happen because I'm done with it and I want it out. And
you've had it done for 6 weeks.
I have, and I like it. I'm happy with it.
It is a good episode. I will not lie.
And you're working on 10.
Yes.
Some ideas for 10, and potentially yep. Even going and researching some locations.
Literally in the coming doing weeks. Field work. Yes.
Yes. Field work. You have a hat. Do you have a fieldwork hat? What does that look like? Is it shoes? Fieldwork shoes. I think it's a hat and shoes. You have a hat and shoes. And then
and nothing
after episode 10, We have 11, which I've written already.
Yes, let's brag about that too.
Yeah, well, we talked, I mean,
shall we, yes,
drivel.
Elliot's got all of his episodes written up to next year, and poor McKay over here is sitting here like, well, la-da-da, I think I might do this next week. I don't know. We'll see.
Yes, I follow the work ahead method.
Yeah, well.
So we, and then we have 11 coming, which is going to be an interesting topic as well. And we're going to continue to do a show like this, correct? In the future, potentially once a month, we're going to shoot for our Patreon subscribers.
Yeah, short versions of this.
Yes.
Once a month, just a quick, you know, maybe 15 or 20 minutes of just a recap of what we've talked about. And, you know, maybe depending on how well that's received, you know, doing something similar to this episode, a long form interview format of each of us.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We're feeling this out. This is all new to us.
Yeah. And so if you liked what you heard, if you hate what you heard, if you want to hear something different, if you want to give us a digital high five, reach out to us, entwinedpodcast@gmail.com. We got @entwinedpodcast, which is the Twitter. We're on Google Plus, Entwined Podcasts. Facebook, I think, is, how's Facebook do it? What is it? Facebook.com/entwined or Entwined Podcast?
Yeah. Entwined Podcast.
Okay. And then this episode is going to be available to everybody. So we're going to push this to the feed. But episodes like this in the future will only be available to the Patreon subscribers on patreon.com/entwined.
Right. And if you want to support the show, go ahead to patreon.com/entwined to take a look at the different subscription methods that we are options that we have available for you. And just thank you so much for the support. I don't know about you, but an idea that was born in February of, hey, we need to do a podcast. We have literally over 1,000 subscribers in that time period.
Correct.
And that boggles my mind.
Correct.
Thank you.
Yes. And I don't know 1,000 people. So there's strangers out there that are listening to us talk right now, either liking us or hating us or somewhere in between. And right. It does. It absolutely boggles the mind. So,
maybe hating us right now because this format is so different from what we've done so far.
Yeah, I know. We're so like scripted and, you know,
McKay doesn't laugh. What's that about?
I know. And then this is like so off the cuff. But so, yeah, we're going to push this to the Patreon feed as well. And then on there, we do, as I mentioned, the color transcript PDFs that are in color that are a full transcript of the show that we read from. And then we add in photos and some additional stuff. We also have an extra show that we offer to the Patreon subscribers. There's some other behind the scenes stuff that we do, posts about what we're working on, photos from on site, and then the highest level and the highest. Yes. And then we have entwined shirts for the highest level on Patreon. We have a tank top for the ladies and a t-shirt for the gentlemen, which is available there or
ladies.
Yes. Right. Correct. Or whatever, whatever you're into. So we don't discriminate.
All right, so for me, P.S. McKay, and Elliot Gladstone, thank you so much for listening. This is a very special episode of Fireside Chats. And remember, subscribe to iTunes and stay twined, everybody.
Correct, stay twined, and we'll see you guys episode 9 Monday, or last Monday, or two Mondays, a different Monday.
Well, let's just say see you at the next episode.
Yeah. Well, you said it. All right, man.
Stay twined, everyone.